Thank you, Lindsay. You have completed the reading of Ecclesiastes, our journey through, and we, just like last week, we were really due to do chapters 9 and 10, but we really sat in a part of 9. Today we're supposed to do 11 and 12, but 11 is similar to chapter 10, some Proverbs sort of feel to it, and I thought it might be helpful just to sit in 12. But one of the things that it does start in chapter 11 is remember your creator while you are young is the heading just above verse 7 of chapter 11. Remember your creator while you are young. Light is sweet, it pleases the eyes. The sun goes on. Be happy, young man, while you are young. Let your heart give you joy in the days of your youth. Follow the ways of your heart and whatever your eyes see, as if we'd tell a young person to do that. But that's where we're at just before we get to Ecclesiastes 12, 1 to 14. And as we get to that, he still talks about age. He still talks about youth. If you look at verse 1, remember your creator in the days of your youth, before the days of trouble come, and the years approach when you will say, I find no pleasure in them. What is it that we're not finding pleasure in? Well, the days that are no longer the days of our youth. In other words, it's not that you will say, I find no pleasure in them. It's rather that you'll say, I find no pleasure in them. That sort of a thing. Why is it that you may not find pleasure in the days post your youth? Well, for some of us, we already know a little bit, don't we? But the interesting thing is, in chapter 12 of Ecclesiastes, the writer beautifully illustrates, if you haven't quite caught on yet what it might be like to be getting older, he graciously shows us this morning. And so let's have a bit of a look at that. But just before we do, I want to ask you if you're feeling old. Now, it doesn't just have to be age. It could be, I don't know if I saw a hand go up there. I see a hand. Okay, we're all feeling old. But it doesn't have to be age. It could be other things that are causing this as well. But age is an amazing equalizer at points. As you perhaps feel older, you may feel less able. As you feel less able, you may feel less useful. And as you feel less useful, you may feel like a burden. That's one of the things that happens as we age, is there is a thought process that goes along. But as that thought process goes along, it actually undoes some of our thinking of our youth that can be helpful, and we might get to that. But if you are feeling old, less able, less useful, a burden, I wanted you to remember something that I told you last week. I may have told you a couple of times. There is a God who loves you. No matter how useless or useful you feel you are, there's a God who loves you as you are. There's a Jesus who is a Savior who stands at the door and he knocks. And if anybody opens, he will come in and eat with them. Revelations 3:20. I tried this. I'm going to try again because I'm a sucker. I don't know where Sharon is. She was here at 8:30. Okay, I saw a cartoon. It's a cartoon, which means it's funny. And so when I explain it to you, you should laugh. Let's see how we go. So in the cartoon, the Grim Reaper is standing at a door and knocks on the door. And this woman opens the door, sees the Grim Reaper and is like, like this, because she thinks her time has come. And the Grim Reaper says, don't panic. I'm just here for the houseplants. Thank you. And thank you for the rest of you for coming. But anyway. So anyway, just for a moment, let's think about aging. And I guess I want you to hold on to that fact that there is a God who loves you. But there's a picture that is painted, and I'm going to ask you for your opinion as to which what it is that Solomon is referring to. But let's start with the first one. I'll give you a clue. It says, before the sun and the light and the moon and the stars grow dark and the clouds return after the rain. What could it be that he's referring to with regards to aging? This one's for me, okay? So I'll give you a clue. I think what it's referring to is eyesight. As we grow older, our eyesight becomes affected. And one of the things that you'll commonly find with old people is things just get darker. When I first saw, and the clouds return after the rain, I thought that might have been incontinence, but I don't think it is. I think that means that during rain, it gets darker because of the clouds, okay? Okay, we'll keep moving along. So this one, this is actually a hard one, but we're just doing it in the order, and so I might need to give you a clue. But when the keepers of the house tremble and the strong men stoop, what do you think that's a reference to? Keepers of the house tremble, strong men stoop. Any ideas? Yep, getting a bit of that, like there's a bit of trembling. We will get to, I think the answer that was up there, we will come to, absolutely. But, okay, it is a tricky one, this one. You'll find they get a bit easier. I think it's the legs. We fall much more easily. Our hands, there's the idea of trembling. It's hard to hold things. And so strong men stoop. Our back, our core, our muscles, they're just not there to the degree that they were. This one's a good one. When the grinders cease because they have few. Thoughts? Teeth. You ready for this? Yeah. Just one. Okay. This one's a confronting one. Those looking through the windows grow dim. Any thoughts? It's not eyesight, but you might first think it is. At least I don't think it's eyesight. Those looking through the windows grow dim. It's very common. The answer was up there earlier. Memory. That there just seems to be a piece of the puzzle that's missing. And more often, it maybe starts with walking into a room having forgotten that you were looking for a piece of the puzzle. But our ability to think quickly and on our feet, our ability to remember, our ability sometimes to process things just becomes diminished. What about this one? When the doors on the street are closed and the sound of grinding fades, I don't think grinding is the grinding of teeth. I think this is actually the grinding of the daily grind, the activity that happens outside. So when the doors on the street are closed and the sound of grinding fades, we've had eyesight, hearing. I think this is a hearing one. We are unable to hear the activity that's happening outside. It's actually, even if the doors are open, it sounds like the doors are closed now because the sound is distant. We can't hear it like we once could. With this one, when people rise up at the sound of birds but their song grows faint, what is that, do you think? Probably a lesser known one, but if you know somebody in particular who is aged, you might find that this is a reality for them. Can't sleep. What is it that you need less of? And also you do less exercise. I was up this morning at 6 a.m. The sound of kookaburras was huge, very loud. I don't think it's a comment on hearing, but it's saying the reason why you're awake is not because you can hear the kookaburras because you can't hear them, but because you're just awake. That's what happens. What about this one? When people are afraid of heights and of dangers in the street. Any ideas? You'll notice that we're just going through the text, one statement at a time. I'm not leaving gaps or anything. When people are afraid of heights, dangers in the streets, I think we get frail. I know that there was somebody at 8:30 who still, at an age they shouldn't, climbs up ladders, much to the shock and horror of their family, but that's something that you should stop doing when you are getting to a certain age and a certain frailty. Now this one is going to be a puzzling one. When the almond tree blossoms, who's seen a blossoming almond tree? Any idea? No. Sorry? That's an almond tree. My almond tree is blossoming down here. It's not blossoming up here, I don't know why. It was just not up there. But yeah, it's this idea that our hair goes grey. And then remembering that Solomon is the writer of Song of Songs, he ends by, yes, he goes there. And the grasshopper drags itself along and desire no longer is stirred. What do you think he's talking about? Okay, awkward silence. He's talking about, well, maybe our libido, but even our ability to follow through if we have a libido is diminished. The grasshopper, this thing with thin, gangly legs, drags itself along the ground. That's what grasshoppers do, if you've noticed. So these are all the things about age. Isn't it interesting that Solomon goes through this in this way? It's almost like a beautiful picture that he paints of a horrible reality. Isn't he gracious when the almond tree blossoms? What a gracious way of saying that, yeah, your hair's gone grey. But to what purpose? Aging is an interesting thing. There's a thing called midlife crisis. It usually happens at that point where you realize I'm not young anymore, that I do have the keepers of the house have lost a certain degree of muscle bulk. I now cannot hold things the way I could. I cannot remember things the way I could. I can't eat things the way I could. I can't see things or hear things. Everything is diminished. You realize in a midlife crisis, at the very least, that one of the things that you've put a faith in or had a reliance on is being slowly but surely taken away from you. It's hard, isn't it? And the interesting thing, though, is that in that midlife crisis, we can go out and buy a sports car, yes. Or we can face the reality and see what it is pointing us to, which seems to be the whole thing of Ecclesiastes all the way along. But Ecclesiastes has dealt with a number of things, and now he's coming to age, and he's talked about youth, and now he's saying, well, while you're young, think about him before these things happen. Choose to think about the bigger things and about God before the other things are taken away. So I've mentioned Richard Rohr before, but he wrote a book which I think I've mentioned before called Falling Upwards, and it's a book about the first and second half of life. And the idea that in the first half of life, we're actually more concerned about the container, our outward appearance, how we are seen, how much we can bench press. All those sorts of things are the first half of life. And then, and not everybody does go into a second half of life, and people sometimes move into a second life much quicker than others. But one of the things about second half of life is I think there's an understanding that it's no longer about the container. Surely, when the container is starting to crack and fall apart, the most important thing is what is in the container. Not how strong we are, or how fast we are, or how we look, but rather who we are. What is it that fills the container? And so we've been sharing a bit of liturgy. I want to share with you a liturgy from a 17th century nun, okay? So it's a 17th century nun, so she's really old, okay? And this is her liturgy on aging. Now, just for a moment, she's actually a little bit more subtle than we would expect an older person to be. So just be aware of that. And I want you to, I hope, be encouraged and maybe challenged by this as she opens our eyes a little bit, perhaps, to aging. This is what she says. Lord, thou knowest better than I know myself that I am growing older and will someday be old. Keep me from the fatal habit of thinking I must say something on every subject and on every occasion. Release me from craving to straighten out everybody's affairs. Make me thoughtful but not moody, helpful but not bossy. And with my vast store of wisdom, it seems a pity not to use it all. But thou knowest, Lord, that I want a few friends at the end. Keep my mind free from the recital of endless details. Give me wing to get to that point. Seal my lips on my aches and pains. They are increasing, and love of rehearsing them is becoming sweeter as the years go by. I dare not ask for grace enough to enjoy the tales of others' pains, but help me to endure them with patience. I dare not ask for improved memory, but for a growing humility and a lessening cocksureness when my memory seems to clash with the memories of others. Teach me the glorious lesson that occasionally I may be mistaken. And finally, keep me reasonably sweet. I do not want to be a saint. Some of them are so hard to live with. But a sour old person is one of the crowning works of the devil. Give me the ability to see good things in unexpected places and talents in unexpected people. And give me, O Lord, the grace to tell them so. It's quite beautiful. It's anonymous. We don't know who this 17th century nun was. But one of the things for her is the importance to age with grace and understanding and humility. One of the temptations, I think, as we age and we find other things we have to let go of because we can no longer hold on to them just because we are getting older, is that we can foolishly think we can replace those things by being the answer to everything for everybody, to being that store of wisdom for everybody. But we're not, necessarily. Which is why, as we see some people age, they grow in grace and humility and understanding, and others grow in arrogance and entitlement and bitterness. It's a legitimate thing to ask God's help with, because it's not easy growing old. It's an opportunity to focus on what is important, but sometimes, even then, we can be tempted to focus on other things. But very quickly, Solomon doesn't end with aging. He goes one step further. He says this, he says, remember him before. Before what? Well, if we have a look at verse 6, remember him before. And then he's got a whole bunch of things that he reels off. He says in verse 6, remember him before the silver cord is severed, the golden bowl is broken, the pitcher is shattered and the wheel is broken. Which are four pictures of before you die. Before it's completely done. Before there is no other opportunity, no turning back, no nothing else. Silver cord is severed, the golden bowl is broken, the pitcher is shattered, the wheel is broken. And in verse 7 he says this, and the dust returns to the ground it came from. Solomon highlights the reality that we are all frail, we've all come from dust. And last week we looked at the idea that for Solomon, he seems to not have an understanding that when we are dead, there might be something else. And yet we get a snippet that he does think there's something else, because he says, and the spirit returns to God who gave it. But essentially, he is saying, think about these things. Think about your creator before your time is up. And then we come at the end. And the whole series on Ecclesiastes is coming to an end with just another three slides, which largely repeat themselves. The last and final words this, and I've given you the message version. I've put the gold nugget that Solomon has for us in gold, which probably makes it a little bit harder to read, which is fear God and do what he tells you. Solomon gets to the nugget at the end. This is for all his wisdom and everything that he's looked for and chased after and pursued and thought about. He comes to fear God and do what he tells you. Fear God, do what he tells you. And according to the message, it says, and that's it. Eventually, God will bring everything that we do out into the open and judge it according to its hidden intent, whether it's good or evil. The NIV doesn't say hidden intent. It just says what is hidden. But Eugene Peterson, I guess, at least wants to encourage us to think about the fact that even our motives and why we've done things are all going to be there for all to see. The last and final word is this, fear God, do what he tells you. What is Ecclesiastes about? Well, maybe in a nutshell, Solomon wants you to know it's not the money, it's not the success, it's not the fame, it's not the reputation or popularity or pleasures or work or youthfulness or sex or possessions. That's not it. If you want to know what life is about, those things are not going to help you understand it. They're not going to help fulfill you. They're not going to be the answer for you. Instead, it comes back to this statement, fear God and do what he tells you, which I just want to paint in a slightly different way for you. We get hung up on fear, which fear is something that we're told in John's Gospel drives out love. But fear, as we've all been told, I'm sure, in the Old Testament, in a statement like this, means to acknowledge God, to reference him, to revere him, to understand that He is there and He's our Creator, and to act accordingly. To fear God essentially means to be who it is that God has created you to be, essentially, at the heart of it. Be the person God created you to be. Fear God and do what He tells you. Be the created one. And be created as the Creator has created you to be. As Solomon says, remember your Creator in the days of your youth. How? Why? Well, for me, and this is me, but I think Scripture pushes us in this direction as well. Because of this reality that there's a God who loves you. A God who created you out of love, by love, and for love. I want to encourage you in that reality. I stumbled across a couple of verses in a psalm this morning as I was getting ready for this morning. And Psalm 37 says this. This is verses 3 and 4. When I find it, Psalm 37, 3 and 4 says this. Trust in the Lord and do good, which is another way of understanding fear God and do what He tells you. But trust in the Lord and do good. Dwell in the land and enjoy safe pasture. It's another psalm by David. He loves pastures and sheep. And then he says this little nugget. Delight yourself in the Lord and He will give you the desires of your heart. Say it again. Delight yourself in the Lord and He will give you the delights of your heart. Don't delight yourself in money, success, fame, reputation, popularity, pleasures, work, youthfulness, sex, possessions, all those things that Solomon has painstakingly gone through for you and even experienced for you so that you don't have to. It comes down to delight yourself in the Lord and He will give you the desires of your heart. Which is an interesting little statement because it's sort of like make God the desire of your heart. And you will have the desires of your heart. Because God longs to be the desire of your heart and to give Himself to you. So we're going to come to the table now, which is a time where we remember that God has given Himself to us. That He would send Himself as a man, that He would die on a cross, so that we would not have love driven out by fear, but instead perfect love would drive out fear in us. So if you don't have something to eat or drink, now's the time to go up the back with everybody else who's just going up now. And as you come back, we will pray and we will eat and we will drink. So there is a God who loves you so much that when you were lost, He came to find you. There is a God who loves you so much that when we couldn't find our own way back, He gave Himself so that we might be able to come to Him. Our Savior Jesus had His body broken and His blood shed so that we could live. But not just so that we could live. His desire was that we would live with Him, in Him. Which is why it's so helpful to be able to eat the bread in remembrance that His body was broken. To be able to drink the juice in remembrance that His blood was shed for us. And so I want to invite you. Jesus didn't make any requirements because He knew that, well, that His gift was freely offered to any who would receive it. you would like to come and taste and see that he is good, to understand something of the mystery of the grace and love that he has, I invite you, why not take the bread that represents his body that was given for you? And so I invite you to do that now. Take, eat. Remember that Christ's body was broken for you. Now be thankful. There was a time when covenants were sealed with blood. You knew that both parties were serious if blood was shed. And God is so serious about us that he shed, or allowed the shedding of the blood of his own son, so that we could understand that he offers a place for each of us in his family, and that he will not back out of that. And so I invite you again, take, drink. Remember that Christ's blood was shed for you, and be thankful.